Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 919, where topic is training and the title is a hybrid program creation, powerlifting and marathons. So I recently started working with a client who wants to compete in powerlifting. They've done a powerlifting meet, but they want to kind of continue with that and continue to get better. But they also want to run marathons. So they have actually run 8 marathons in their life. Crazy person. So they want to do 2 more to kind of top it off at 10. And in that, we also want to kind of have the goal of qualifying for the Boston Marathon. So it's pretty cool. The qualifying total in 2021 here, I think the Boston Marathon is in October. But the qualifying total for this year is for this client, she's a female, and I don't even really know her age. I would say she's in her 20s. So her qualifying time is going to be 3 hours and 30 minutes. Her current best marathon is 3 hours and 38 minutes. So she's really freaking close. Awesome. So that's going to be one of our goals. And then the other goal in powerlifting, she'll be competing at 132 pounds. Her current PR total is 590. So what we're going to do is by next June, our goal, I really would love to hit it by the end of this year, but definitely within a whole year, she'll be able to easily hit an elite total in the USPA. So a 742.5 pound total. It's probably somewhere squatting around 250, benching 160, and deadlifting around 330-ish, so 330, 335. She'll be able to hit all those numbers. Won't be a problem. So that's going to be exciting in that she can be very good at marathons, qualifying for the Boston Marathon, and she can be excellent at powerlifting by having an elite total. So what I wanted to do in today's podcast was talk about our programming. How are we going to accomplish both of these goals? Very often people would believe that running marathons and powerlifting are going to be competing, kind of competing training methods or goals or intents, but it doesn't have to be. So what I'm working with this client for is to create a program, both nutrition and training, that they can use at all times to slowly progress both goals. And then as we get closer to a marathon, they might kind of lean their training towards that. As they get closer to a powerlifting meet, they would lean their training more towards that. So what we did was we created a training structure that allows for both goals to be met, and then you would just kind of make small modifications depending on which goal you want to emphasize. And the same thing with nutrition. So they had been working with a coach, probably a great coach for what they do, but they didn't do this. So that's where I get to kind of come in and have fun. So the client's background, they have a long history of swimming. They've done some cross-country and track, makes sense with the marathons. And they have a lifting background with CrossFit. So this is kind of our kind of starting place. This is a little bit of the background. And now I want to kind of talk about how we would create the program for this. One of the things I want to throw out there is, if you have goals and you have multiple goals, don't believe that you can't do one or the other, or you have to pick, or, you know, you have to have kind of like, you know, you have to give up on one dream to fully go after another. I have tons of clients all the time where we mix goals. I've helped a client get a pro card in aesthetic, aesthetic competitions. So they have a pro card in that, who also had a top 5 national total for powerlifting. So at a meet, we were about to set the national record for the squat. Unfortunately, they got injured in their deadlift, so we weren't able to finish the deadlift, but they had actually hit the national record for the squat, and they were actually at the bottom of the weight class allowance because we were on our way prepping for some pro qualifying shows in aesthetics. So pretty awesome. Basically, what they ended up doing was they kind of just tweaked their adductor in their squat. It messed up with the deadlift, and within a month, we were back to squatting and deadlifting totally fine. So it was just a small annoyance, but unfortunately, on that day, kind of like derailed us a bit. So, but there's somebody who has a pro card in aesthetics, top 5 national in strength. I've also helped another client. They won a world championship in a firefighter competition. So it was definitely endurance based with some strength mixed in there. And they also are an excellent power lifter as well. So you can have, and I could continue naming people, I just wanted to stop there because it's a good enough point, is you can achieve anything you want to achieve if you want to work your ass off for it. So what helps is having a coach or somebody who knows how to do these things. So I know how to make somebody a great marathon runner. I know how to make somebody a great powerlifter. I know how to make somebody, you know, great in aesthetic sports. I've helped people in pro sports like baseball, football. I've helped people get collegiate level scholarships. I've helped Olympians in various sports like swimming, BMX. So if you have the knowledge of how to do all of those individual categories, it then helps with knowing how to blend things together. So I've been very fortunate to have had a ton of fun variety of experiences in my years as a personal trainer. So I've been a personal trainer now for 19 years. I've worked way over 2,000 people. I used to teach at a university level, teaching like exercise physiology labs and stuff like that. I worked with over 500 students, teaching them through like a personal trainer education type course. So I have tons and tons and tons of information, tons of experience. So find somebody who knows. So if you have goals and somebody tells you they're not possible, say bullshit and then go find somebody who knows how to make it possible. The people are out there, okay? So you can achieve what you want to achieve. The benefit of having somebody who can tell you what to do is, hey, here's what you would have to do, and then you get to decide. Doesn't mean you have to. I mean, you can just kind of, you know, feel it out, see what the efforts would be, and then if you want to give that to it, go for it. But you absolutely can achieve crazy, awesome, fun things. You do not have to pick one thing over another, okay? So, what I want to do real quick is we're going to go through, it's not going to be quick, unfortunately. So, what we're going to do first is go through their training program. And I want to kind of talk about our schedule, talk a little bit about how we set up the exact lifts and the structure of each workout. And then just kind of talk about how we would modify the workouts based on whether they're getting ready for a marathon or a powerlifting meet. So, the reason why I want to give this information, I think it would be helpful, is just to kind of see the different things that go into play. You can see what we're focusing on, how we set up our workouts. There's a lot of information in here that you can apply back to your own training, especially if you have the goal of trying to do cardiovascular endurance events and strength events. So you can do both, absolutely. And then today's podcast is going to be an example of how. So, this client had already had a schedule of training 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, and then taking Sunday off. So that schedule's totally fine. We can work with that. So I just kept things the same. Rather than asking them to rearrange their entire lifestyle, we'll just go within what they normally do. So the first workout of the week is Monday. Is going to be squat and deadlift, kind of max effort, competition style lifts. This person has done a powerlifting meet, but they're still very new to powerlifting itself. So they're crazy strong, which is awesome, and we're going to be able to get the elite total, which is awesome, but we still have to learn how to like improve our technique and kind of get those things squared away. So that's the first workout, is they're going to be doing some squat and deadlifts with very low intensity, low volume running. Just enough volume of running to kind of work on increasing their tolerance of volume throughout a weekly span. And it's something that we can kind of tweak over time. So in their program, like we always do, we list their schedule. We have explanations for how to handle warm-ups, why rest times are important, why the structure of the workouts using circuits, like what is a circuit, why do we do it that way. We also talk about how do they select the right weight for their working sets, how they are supposed to make weekly progressions in volume and intensity. And then descriptions on how to send in videos for video review. So all of those things, there's paragraphs of explanation and then podcasts linked with that for extra explanation. So every program we ever write has all that stuff. Now, their first workout of the week, like we said, Monday, is going to be squat and deadlift, kind of max effort with some low volume, low intensity running. So the first thing we do is we do some movement preps. We do some adductor foam rolling. We do some cross-legged glute stretching. And then a lunge PNF style stretch, which is like a contract release type stretch. And it helps to open up tight tissues. So this client works out in the morning, which is going to help us in a sense to where they're going to wake up with very predictable tightnesses. So we can just kind of frame and design this movement prep however they need. Now, if we had to work out in the evening, say they work on their feet all day, they're probably going to have tight, really tight hamstrings, so we'd have to work on loosening those. If they sat at a desk all day, they're going to have tight hip flexors, so we'd have to work on loosening those. And then also, if they have a variable job, who knows what they're coming in with. So you have to have kind of like a more broad-scoped movement preparation if somebody works out in the evening as opposed to in the morning. In the morning, you're just getting out of bed for 8 hours. There's a predictable like degree of tightnesses depending on the person, but usually it's very predictable from work day to day if they work out in the morning. So they do some adductor foam rolling, cross-legged glute stretch, and lunge. The adductor foam rolling opens up their adductor. Makes sense. So the cross-legged glute stretch opens up the internal glute muscles. So piriformis, all those things that deal with internal, external rotation. And then we have the lunge stretch, which helps open up the hip flexor. Then what we do is we go into some dynamic movements. So we actually have kind of like a downward dog position into a runner's lunge. And that's awesome, awesome, awesome for opening up the hamstrings. Helps to work on opening up the adductors and the hip flexors even more. We then go into a crescent to like a hamstring style stretch. And that's another variation of just kind of opening up the same muscles, but a little bit different positions. And then they go into a wide push-up kind of chest opener, which is like a dynamic stretch for the chest muscles, which helps open up our external rotation of the shoulders to get us under a barbell for squatting. So they have all of that. That takes less than 15 minutes. I've done it. I've timed it. I promise it takes less than 15 minutes, but it gets them up and moving, gets everything going, gets them ready for the day, the big events. So what we do first is we go into barbell squats. So what I'm having them do is change over from a high bar position to a low bar position. The way they're built, high bar does not utilize their glutes and hamstrings. They have well-developed glutes and hamstrings, so they need to be using them. So high bar was not using the best positions for their strength. It was going to overrely on lower back strength, which we wouldn't really want for general health purposes. Plus, it's not going to be the strongest over time. So we're switching over to a low bar position. It's going to help them get more involvement of like their general hip structure, and it's going to just give them more power coming out of the bottom. Then we have technique videos like we always do. We have bracing explanation for how, they're supposed to brace on squats and heavy lifts. So they're going to hold their pee, pull the belly button in, breathe into their belly, not into their chest. So all the good stuff to make sure they're nice and safe, lower back is safe. We prompt them to send in videos like we always do with the big lifts. And then I write in their warm-up weights and rep count. Since I'm new to working with this person, I want to dictate exactly what I want them to do because I won't have an idea of what they're doing if I don't write it down. So I want them to try it my way, and then we'll kind of talk at the end of the week, end of the first week, and we adjust as we need. They do a heavy walkout hold at a weight that is just slightly above their current max. It's only at like, I think, 105% of their max, but it's a weight that I want them to get used to feel of it, get used to bracing underneath it, get used to walking it out, because this is a weight that very quickly within 1 or 2 months, they're going to be able to actually squat. So I want them to get under it, get comfortable with it, and get used to it. Then they do their working sets. So what I did for this person was I know what their most recent squat max was. I know the quality of it, so I know whether it's repeatable, all the variations that would go into weight selection. So what I did for them was I recorded what weight I want them to use. And then I gave them a total rep count that I want them to reach. So, for example, the first workout, they're going to be just squatting 165 pounds. Since they're getting used to low bar, we kept their squat pretty low for the first week in terms of weight load. So I want them to use a low bar position, and I want them to just get 16 total reps in the fewest sets possible. So they might get a set of four, you know, like four sets of four. They might get a four, a three, a two, whatever the hell would add up to 16. But that's the goal, is they want to get to 16 total reps at 165 pounds. That's a controllable volume. We'll see what the quality is, and then we'll adjust for week two based on how that week looks. If it looks light and easy, we go up in big weight. If it looks kind of screwy and a little weird, we'll just maybe repeat it or make a small jump, like a 5 or 10 pound jump. So it really is just kind of week by week, depending on the quality of their lifts, we just adjust along the way. So it helps to be able to do that, so that way they're not forced into trying to target weight counts, that like weight amounts that they can't do on bad days or even mediocre days, and it doesn't force them into set, rep counts per set that maybe they can't do on bad days or even mediocre days. So it gives a lot more variability, but still a controlled amount of volume and intensity, so that way we can predict what the future outcome of the program will be, like a four-week program. So after that, they go into conventional deadlifts. We have the same thing. We have tutorial video, bracing explanation, prompting for a video to be sent for technique review. We give them the exact weights and reps we want them to do for the warm-up, and then we give them the working weight and total rep count for each week. So that's going to be basically how that workout goes, is you have static style movements like P&F style stretches. So static stretches and P&F style stretches. And then we get into kind of more dynamic style movements, dynamic stretches that prep us for the main lifts of the day. We go into barbell squat, and eventually that might be a different variation than competition, but today it's competition style. And then we go into a deadlift. Then what we do is we get into a little bit of running. So I have them warm up with just a half mile run, and then I have them go for 1 mile run in this first week. It's just basically getting them used to running right after lifting. Have very, very, very little intensity expectation, very low volume, so not long distance. It's just something that gets them moving after squatting and deadlifting, gets their body accustomed to that style of kind of back-to-back body demands. So with this workout, we give the prompting of how to kind of modify this. So it says this workout structure is something we can use throughout your future, but shift the intensity and volume however is needed to hyper-focus on either strength or running. When closer to a powerlifting meet, you would add an extra emphasis towards the squats and deadlifts. When closer to a marathon, you would decrease the volume of squats and deadlifts and increase the emphasis towards the running. So it gives extra explanations about how many, like what would be a set rep count that you would do if you want to increase or decrease the intensity and volume of the squats and deadlifts. But that's essentially a workout that we can use all the time. So even if they're getting ready for a marathon, you'd want to maintain strength at least in the main lifts. So this would maybe come in, they work up to, you know, 95% of their previous max just for a single on squats and deads, just to kind of teach the body what heavy things is, make sure it remembers good technique, and then you go into the running. So there's a lot of change you can do within this structure. But that's the first workout of the week. Then they go into the second workout of the week is bench press and kind of full body training. And that full body aspect is just to kind of open up any tight muscles, open up full range of motion of anything that was tight from the day before in the squats and deadlifts followed by the running. So it's bench press, kind of upper body, good, a lot of like just whole body movement going in. And then Wednesday is only running. So right now I have them running between 3 to 6 miles, depending on how they feel. This is a volume that they were used to doing. They typically only ran 3 to 6 miles per week. So we're slowly right now adding in an extra 3 miles just to help. Well, it can be up, it can be as little as 3 up to more, but just get them used to running a little more so we can start modifying the intensity of it to get them ready for that Boston Marathon qualifying total. So what we're really trying to work on is increasing their GPP, their general physical preparedness. How much overall workload are they used to? If you can get someone to do more overall workload, you can then fine-tune that workload directed towards whatever goal you want, whether it would see, say, example, powerlifting or example, marathon. But if somebody only does, you know, say 2 workouts a week at 1 hour each, what the hell can you really accomplish in 2 hours a week, right? So you would get them used to doing 3 hours, then 4 hours, then 5 hours. And then all of a sudden you can kind of dedicate more time, more focus into different areas now that you have more hours, more time of their working out to be able to use in whatever you need. So we're really just trying to increase their general tolerance of running so that way we can modify the intensity, move it up or down as needed based on what their emphasis is at that time. So their Thursday workout is going to be squat and deadlift accessories. Friday workout is bench press accessories and just some really light running. And then Saturday is another big running day. So they're lifting weights Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. They're running at least some on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So this gets enough frequency of running that we'll be able to play with something. We have enough to play with to get a result pushed in one way or the other. It also has enough lifting in it that you can modify that intensity and kind of push it around. So, for example, on Wednesday and Saturday, which are like the running only days, one of the prompts we have for how do we manage kind of the hybrid concept of this program. How do we work towards powerlifting when that's the main focus, or how do we modify to work towards marathons if that's the main focus? So on those Wednesdays and Saturdays, on the full running days, it gives some prompting on distance selection, intensity selection, and then we talk about this workout structure is something we can use throughout your future, but shift the intensity and volume however is needed to hyper-focus on either strength or running. When closer to a powerlifting meet, you would use this day to focus on nervous system and or muscle recovery as felt as needed. We talked about that, and we'll talk about that as what that looks like. And then that prompts them to do like stretching, blood flow restoration, or even complete rest, where they might actually sneak in an extra sleep to help with recovery. Or, as they're getting closer to a marathon, this would be kind of a high-volume running day to increase their overall running volume tolerance. So, when it's close to a powerlifting meet, well, let's just say it's the off-season. They might run 3 to 6 miles this day. If you feel like crap, only run 3. If you feel great, run 6. And you just kind of take notes, modify how you feel from week to week. You might want to adjust up or down if you feel too tired or too worn out. Or if you felt super energetic and you're like, man, I wish I could have done more. Then you go ahead and make that adjustment. But we take notes so that way each week we can know what the effect is within the following couple days and how that affects our weight training. So then we know if we want to go up or down in the intensity and or volume of these running days. If they seem very impactful negatively towards strength, well, as soon as we get towards a powerlifting meet, maybe 12 weeks out, maybe 8 weeks out, we drop the running entirely. But right after the powerlifting meet, we pick it right back up and start ramping it back up. So that way, if they then want to choose to do a marathon, we have that basic, that general physical preparedness, that general running tolerance already built right back up. So the idea of this programming, so you can kind of like, let's sum this up, is that they have 4 days a week of lifting. They have 4 days a week of running. How we included this, by each workout, we have some type of movement preparation through kind of like static slash dynamic style movements. We then get into the bigger, kind of heavier lifts of the day. Then we get into kind of the more moderate stuff that kind of gets muscle damage, gets time under tension, works on endurance, works on balance. There are different variations of aspects of focus. But the idea is that the workouts follow movement preparation, strength lift, and then kind of accessory or complementary lifts, and then we would run at the end. So you're going to use that format if you have to have a workout that would include multiple factors such as lifting and running in the same workout. So that's a general approach that everybody could use, is do some type of movement prep to release and loosen any muscles that might feel tight that would hinder your positioning that you can get into with the bigger lifts, such as squats and deadlifts. You can then apply that back to the running as needed. So, that is the overall program. What I want to talk about next is their nutrition. So, if we look at the nutrition, we have it paired with the demands of the training. This person is roughly around the body weight that they need to be. They don't have to lose a ton of body weight. So we can actually emphasize a little bit of cleaning up of body composition. What that means is we can lose a few pounds of fat, but we want to make sure that we don't undereat with the sole purpose of losing fat, that we lose the adaptation of strength and muscle development in our weakest areas. So what this means is we're doing caloric cycling. So on Mondays and Thursdays, they're highest intensity of workouts, we're going to eat the most. On Tuesdays and Fridays, they're lower intensity workouts, but still better than the running. Like, they're just lower intensity weight training days. They're going to eat medium amounts. Then, on the running days, we have some variance, but in a sense, it's going to be the lower amounts. What this does is, by calorically cycling, we can get them used to eating more calories per week, but not gain fat. We've talked about the concept of caloric cycling and how that allows you to eat more overall calories. And that's exactly what we're taking advantage of in this situation, is if I can get them to eat more and have their metabolism be very high, very quick, very aggressive, that allows us to get faster adaptations made from the body, faster developments made from the body, with less of those calories being stored as body fat. So we talked about, in a couple recent podcasts, we talked about this concept. For example, in podcast number 906, it was titled Client Diet for a TV Role, What We Focused on the Most. So we had a client getting ready for a television role, and they wanted to get leaner, but also get volumed out, like puff their muscles out, get bigger, fuller looking. So we talked about in podcast 906 how we're going to hyper-focus high intensity, high volume of training, but we have to fuel that. So that way they get leaner, but they continue to build muscle and continue to get stronger. You can do that. We also talk about in podcast number 902, which is titled Nutrition Diet Review, Peak Body Composition, how we would feed change rather than starve change. So by doing caloric cycling, it allows them to eat more while staying lean. This allows them to have more calories available for recovery, more calories available for adaptation, for strength production, for growth development. So it just gives us way more to work with. It's like money in the bank. We have more money to work with, right? Okay. Now, the fact that we have the calories in the structure that we have, meaning the first of the two weight training days is actually the higher calorie day, is because they don't need to lose a lot of fat. So we're actually going to be kind of eating ahead of our demand and then trying to out-train the demand, the amount of calories. So what this is going to do is it's going to help fuel everything they're doing for maximum performance, but there's never going to be too much of a surplus where it starts to form fat. It means we're not going to get a ton of fat loss. We're going to get some, but we're going to get maximal amounts of strength and muscle adaptation. Whereas if we had the higher calories on the second day, what that does is that means we're trying to mostly work on fueling the recovery of the first day, but we didn't overly fuel the intensity for the first day. Meaning the first day would have dug them into a little bit deeper of a hole because we didn't eat above that demand. This actually increases their fat loss throughout the process. So if you increase your calories in caloric cycling on the second of the days of training back to back, you're actually promoting more fat loss. If you increase your calories in the first day of back to back training for caloric cycling, you're going to emphasize more strength development, more muscular development, more performance development. So there's a lot of little nuances, but in general, that's kind of a concept to keep in mind, is if I'm doing caloric cycling, when do I want my high calorie days? So for this person, since we want some fat loss, but that's not really our main goal is performance, we're going to feed the first day as the highest calorie, so they have kick-ass amazing workouts. Then we feed the second day a little bit lower, so it's still fueled for that day, but since it's a less intense day, we don't need as many calories. We still keep our protein nice and high, around 1 gram per pound of body weight. That's going to allow for great muscle recovery, along with the caloric intake being nearly sufficient for maintenance. So we're not in a huge deficit. So that means more of that protein can go towards repairs rather than having to be chewed up as energy. So that's going to be our caloric swing, is Mondays and Thursdays are our highest amounts. Tuesdays and Fridays are our mediums. Wednesday and Saturday are our lowest. And then Sunday is also an optional as well. So how we have it set up is Saturdays and Sundays, they're given in ranges. So, for example, this client, on one of the days, one of the 2 days, they have the range of 1,800 calories to 2,400 calories. The calorie range is to allow them to break from the meal plan if they want to eat something fun at a social event. But they can also use that for greater recovery from the training week. So if they feel beat up and they're tired coming into this Saturday, we'd want them to eat towards the higher end of the range. If they feel okay energy-wise, okay recovery-wise, we'd have them eat towards the lower end of the range, so that way they can stay lean and not gain any unnecessary fat. Now, if the person says, okay, well, if you feel beat up and tired coming into, like, the weekends, if we eat towards the higher end of the range, would I have to worry about gaining body fat? The answer is no. If you're coming into that day beat up and tired, that means your body is underfed. It's not getting enough calories for the work that it needs to do. So if you add calories, all you're doing is actually fueling the work for adaptations and recovery. You're not adding calories to the point where it would have no purpose and it would just be stored as body fat. If you're beat up, you're tired, you're worn out, that's the body telling you it's underfueled for the adaptation and recovery. So therefore, adding in the calories, you don't have to worry about body fat. So it prompts her to have all that. We actually have meal times. So, for example, this client wakes up at 4:15 in the morning. Crazy person. So they're a teacher, so they have to get up pretty early. At 4:30, they have some coffee, piece of fruit, 2 tablespoons peanut butter. 5 o'clock, they're already in their workout. So 5 o'clock, I have them doing an intra-workout drink, about 20 to 40 grams of sugar from some kind of sugary drink like Gatorade, Powerade, juice, something like that. And it helps fuel their workouts, give them kick-ass energy, excited energy for the workout. Then right after the workout, around 6:30, they're going to have 200 to 400-ish calories of protein and a quick digesting carbohydrate. And they can even have a coffee there if they want as well. So, and later in the program, I tell them what are the best protein sources, what are the best quick digesting carb sources. So it's actually telling them that's the category of food they should select from. The range of 200 to 400 calories gives them the range of, hey, if I'm super hungry at this meal, I'll eat towards the higher end. If I'm not as hungry, I'll eat towards the lower end. So they have that meal at 6:30. Then right again at 8 o'clock, they eat right before their workday starts. Kind of gets into the more messy, kind of more challenging part. So again, they'll have a meal of protein and quick digesting carbs. This makes sure that they had glycogen replenishment from their workout, at least to some degree, and it fuels the activity they're about to do to make sure that by the time they get to their lunch at 12:30, they're not buried themselves into some huge deficit that causes a lot of cortisol, causes a lot of counter processes towards fat loss, and it would hinder their recovery from the workout. So we want to make sure they recover fully and maximally. So we want to really fuel that morning part of time, those first 6 hours or so right after the workout. We want to make sure they eat a good amount. So then at 12:30, they have protein with carbs and or fats. It just kind of depends on how they feel, whatever foods they prefer. As long as their protein requirements are met, they can eat whatever like amounts of carbs and or fats or whatever mixture of those they want. So that calorie count is between 400 to 600 calories in that meal. Then 3:45-ish to 5 o'clock, they have kind of open time right after school lets out, and I have them eat about a 200 to 300 calorie snack. What they noted was they typically would eat a snack right before bed. Well, that's probably because they got to that point with a little bit of a caloric deficit, and their body was looking to try to snag a hold of something extra. But we don't really want those calories right before we go to bed. We want those calories more in our daytime to fuel activity, to fuel movement, and then just the leftover protein would go towards kind of repair and growth. So we don't want to intake a bunch of carbs and fats right before bed. It's not going to help as much as eating that food earlier in the day, so that way the whole damn day you're getting the recovery and adaptation and you're fueled well. So then at 6 o'clock is their last meal of the day. They have between 400 and 600 calories. Again, it's a mixture of protein, carbs, and fats. And they have some example meals that they would typically eat. They actually were eating really good food. They were just not eating enough in the beginning of the day. So their calories were kind of more evening and afternoon, evening heavy. So we're flipping that around and we're making most of their calories kind of more early, kind of midday peaked. So that way they have the chance to burn off any kind of excesses. They have a good amount of protein coming in at all times for fueling adaptation and repair. So it's a lot of great, great, great stuff. And then around 8:30, 9 o'clock, they go to bed. So that's their day. is they wake up at 4:15. They have a little bit of food before they work out. They have sugar while they work out. They have a little bit of food right after they work out. Then they have 1, 2, 3, 4 meals throughout the rest of the day. The overall amount of their calories is going to be focused around their workouts, which for this person happens to be in the morning. So they're going to have more of their calories around the morning and less of the calories away from their workouts, which would be in the evenings. So we've talked about this in just the podcast yesterday, 918. We talked about learning what and when to eat. We talked about the when to eat component and how it's important to focus your caloric intake around your activity. So that way we get best kind of body composition, we get best recovery and fueling from our workouts, best adaptation from our workouts. Okay? So that's their nutrition plan, that's their nutrition structure. In the kind of finishing part of the program, we explain what are good protein sources, what are their good carb sources, including which ones count as quick digesting carbs. We tell them when they can eat vegetables, what are the best meals for that, how they should focus on their fluids, what should be their main focus of fluids throughout the day, and how much. We talk about how to flavor their foods, how to prep their foods. So we talk a lot about that kind of like good basic information, so that way they have all their questions kind of answered with more of the specifics. Then from there, she would take the training program and nutrition program, and she would use them for the first week. We would communicate, answer any questions that we would need to answer, make sure that they understand exactly what they're supposed to do, work through any gray areas, and just kind of enjoy it and tweak it as we go. So, this is the program that we would create as an example. For somebody who wants to do both marathons and powerlifting, they can be freaking awesome at marathons, be able to qualify for the Boston Marathon. They can be freaking awesome at powerlifting. Within a year, I believe they would be able to reach an elite total in powerlifting, which is pretty badass. They can do this because they're willing to put in the work. They eat very consistently every day. They train 6 days a week. They make the time for their goals. So therefore, we can do some kick-ass fun things. So this would be the program that best fit their already current lifestyle. We just tweaked it, modified it, made sure we crossed our T's and dotted our I's. We got everything that we needed to be great at marathons. We got everything that we need to be great at powerlifting. So, whatever you want to achieve, don't cut yourself short. Don't believe that there are limitations. You can achieve whatever you want. You just have to find somebody who knows how to do it, so they can tell you what to do. Okay? Hopefully this was interesting. Hopefully it was helpful to kind of hear what we would do structure-wise, focal point-wise, concept-wise. So hopefully that was helpful. If you need any help with creating programs that might fit your needs, especially if you have kind of separate needs or different needs or multiple needs, just let us know. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. We can at least set up a consultation or even help with program creation, whatever is most helpful for you. So again, our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Awesome. Well, if you liked today's podcast, please click like. If you think it's helpful, please share it. The more people we can reach with the podcast, the more people we can help. So thank you if you share the podcast. It really does make a difference. If you like the information that we present in the podcast, you can always find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd always love to hear from you. I truly appreciate comments, truly appreciate the emails. So thank you to those who reach out, and to everybody else, reach out too, okay? So our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.